the new theater of the mind. The Bruce Collins Show.
Welcome back to The Bruce Collins Show. We're very glad to have you join us. The Bruce Collins Show airs every Friday night at midnight right here at WWPR, 1490 AM. You can listen to past archives of The Bruce Collins Show at FringeRadioNetwork.com. That's FringeRadioNetwork.com. There's a tab just for The Bruce Collins Show on the Fringe Radio Network website. We would appreciate it if you're able to spread the word for our show by word of mouth, social media, or in whatever creative way you can. Also, we have a Facebook page for The Bruce Collins Show. Please like us there. And you can email the show at Bruce_Collins_show@AOL.com. Drop us a line. Also, brand new, we have a YouTube page. You can find us at YouTube under The Bruce Collins Show, and we have many episodes right there at The Bruce Collins Show on YouTube. Our guests this evening are Reverend Michael Carter. He's a regular to the History Channel's Ancient Aliens programs, and he's written the book, A New World, If You Can Take It. And joining us, you've either seen the movie American Sniper or you've heard about it. Robert Vera is the author of A Warrior's Faith. Robert knew Chris Kyle and Ryan Jobe, both portrayed in the American Sniper movie. And Robert has written a book about Robert Jobe entitled A Warrior's Faith. That's next on The Bruce Collins Show. And joining us this week, it's my extreme honor to welcome Reverend Michael Carter. Reverend Michael Carter is the best-selling author of the book Alien Scriptures, and his new book is A New World, If You Can Take It, God, Extraterrestrials, and the Evolution of Human Consciousness. Michael is an ordained interfaith minister and received his BA degree in letters from the College of New Rochelle. He received his master's in divinity degree from Union Theological Seminary in New York City, class of 2000. He has served as a staff chaplain, board certified at Lenox Hill Hospital, Beth Israel Hospital, Beth Israel Cancer Center, Methodist Hospital, and New York Hospital Queens, while residing in New York City. While serving various Unitarian Universalist congregations in New York, Michael was trained as an anti-racism trainer and has been recognized by President Clinton for his efforts. Michael was also a weekly columnist for the Asheville Citizen Times. And Michael has also appeared on George Norrie's Coast to Coast AM radio show and on George Norrie's TV show Beyond Belief. TV appearances include being a regular consultant on the History Channel's very popular Ancient Alien series, as well as being featured in the UFO TV documentary The Real 4400. Reverend Carter was also featured in Steven Spielberg's TV documentary Abduction Diaries for the Sci-Fi Channel. Diaries was the precursor to Spielberg's HBO series Taken. Author Whitley Strieber calls Reverend Carter's first book, Alien Scriptures, the best book ever written on the topic. His new book, again, is A New World If You Can Take It, God, Extraterrestrials, and the Evolution of Human Consciousness. It's now available, and he was also invited to the Edgar Cayce Conference last October, where he met up with other ancient alien commentators. Reverend Carter, welcome to the Bruce Collins Show.
Thank you, Bruce Collins. It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, I have to take a deep breath because that was a long introduction.
Yes.
If you go back, say, I don't know, 20, 30 years, would you have believed your life would have taken you along this path?
Oh, my God. That's a great question. No, not at all. And you know what? The bio, and I should have said you could have cut it either way. the bio that you read, when I first started doing the radio stuff, and people would say, well, we need a bio. And it didn't dawn on me all those credits until I actually looked, because it was just, it wasn't intentional. It was just that, my God, look at the things that I was fortunate enough to take part in. But no, I would not, at least not on this topic. I always knew that I wanted to be a clergy person. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, it could have been a secular clergy person. It could have been like a therapist or something. But I always knew that I wanted to do some type of work around spirituality and religion. This was when I was a kid. And, that there would be a message that I would be required to share. But I had no idea that it would be about off-world intelligences. Mm-hmm. Now, great question.
Now, as I understand it, you've been a long-time UFO contactee. How did this all begin?
Well, who was it? The Danish philosopher Kierkegaard says that life is lived forward, but it's only understood backwards. When I was a child, I had many episodes of high strangeness with orbs in my room, being able to see the auras around people, and sometimes even the skeletal structure inside their body. But I thought that that was normal. Now, there were some instances when I would wake up with blood on my pillow, but I didn't know where the blood was coming from. I thought maybe I was bleeding from my ear or something like that. Mm-hmm. But the definitive contact for me, where there was really no doubt, I mean, even then I didn't know that these were probably visits or implants or what. I had no template for it. But on December 28th, 1989, coming back from the pyramids in Chichen Itza and Tulum, I was invited to a party. I talk about it a bit in the first book. And I didn't want to go because it was so cold, but I also wanted to go to kind of show off my tan and all that. I mean, it was like 85, 90 degrees in Mexico. And so I went to a party in Times Square. No adult beverages or anything like that. I stayed about an hour and a half. Had some deviled eggs or some potato salad or something. And I went back home. Caught the subway back home. And I don't even know to this day if I had to get up to go to the bathroom, or maybe I just sent something in the room. But when I got up, there was a being at the edge of my bed, and my room was lit up in like this blue white light. This being was like a blue light around them, like a cobalt blue. And they had this aura shining around them. They were very small, spindly, had a jumpsuit on that looked like Reynolds wrap, that kind of shiny material, mm-hmm. and had a pear-shaped head and these big eyes. And, you know, but this individual was not gray. It was more like a chalk color. And I thought my heart was going to come out of my chest. And I pulled the covers up over my head. Like a real macho man, right? And I thought it would go away. And I heard this whoosh, whoosh, and I felt the temperature change like I was outside. Now, remember, I'm at the Excelsior Hotel in New York City, 45 West 81st Street, on the 15th floor. It was a residential hotel, so people could live there. We lived there.
Yeah.
And when I opened my eyes and pulled the cover down, no one was there. And this went on. These visits went on for about 6 to 8 months, maybe even a year, every new and full moon. So it was twice a month. And I would be paralyzed sometimes. And they would show me pictures in my head. Or if there would be a voice in my head. They never talked to me with their lips moving. It would be just like a picture or a voice. And it would be these particular beings. And then later on, I had the pleasure of meeting two reptilian beings. Believe me, that got my attention as well. But what I came to realize, and I've also seen the Nordics, I guess people would call them Palladians, but they were very blonde, blue-eyed, very built, tall, beings. And it got me into thinking about religion, because I'm not a nuts and bolts person. I don't care about propulsion systems or reverse engineering. And I'm glad there are people who do have that kind of mindset. But I was more interested in what transformation occurred when you looked into the eyes of someone not from this planet. And so I was more interested in the spiritual aspects of contact, as opposed to, you know, what kind of craft they came in or, you know, where they came from or that kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, before we go on further, can you give us a helicopter view of both of your books? And that way people tonight listening on WWPR tomorrow morning or even tonight, if they want to go on Amazon and order it, tell us, give us like a helicopter view, a summary of Alien Scriptures and then also your book, A New World, if you can take it.
Okay. Alien Scriptures is a story of some of my contact experiences because they kind of go hand in hand. And it's also my research. I stand on the shoulders of Dr. Barry Downing and Reverend Virginia Brasington and, you know, people like that who, Morris K. Jessup had written a book back in the 50s about the Bible and flying saucers. My research and my experiences led me to look at the Quran, the Torah, and the New Testament, and it's my conclusion that these books are talking about contact, our ancestors having contact with extraterrestrial intelligences. It doesn't take away from the wisdom of these texts or the lessons learned, but that's where I come down on the side of it. Mm-hmm. New World, if you can take it, for me was the next step in ancient astronaut theory. You know, we've come to the conclusion that yes, off-world intelligences were responsible consciously or unconsciously for at least the three monotheistic religions. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go further because what are we saying? Are we saying that there is a God, and I'm using that word in quotations, and God drives a flying saucer? I don't think so. And the second book talks about the various forms of spirituality that human beings can participate in order to evolve, in order to expedite their own spiritual growth. And so you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I know a lot of people have left religion because, well, you pick up a newspaper. But I don't think you necessarily have to get rid of all of it. There's a lot of lessons to be gleaned. And so those books were the product of my research and thinking.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think you were chosen?
I was chosen, at least what I was told, from past life stuff, that this is not my first time interacting with these intelligences, and that I indeed had, I guess contract would be the word, that I agreed that outside of just wanting to evolve and grow my soul, that I was going to spread the news that we're not alone, that we still need to be choosing love over fear and to get over our fear of difference, and that I signed up for this, if you will.
Yeah. Now, I know you're aware that there are people who claim they've had negative experiences with alien contact. But your experiences, in case people haven't heard your story, have been quite positive, correct?
Yes, I have had positive experiences. I know people who have had not so great experiences, and I honor that, and I believe that. I look at these individuals like I would look at another brother or sister on the earth plane. You have people who are more evolved and less evolved. You have people who mean you well, and you have people who don't. So that's where I come down on that. I'm not one of these people who think that all extraterrestrial intelligences want to hold our hands and sing Kumbaya, but I also wanted to get the story out that all of them are not here to, you know, do rectal probes and take ovum and sperm either. I just wanted to give a balanced view.
Yes. Now, where are these beings coming from?
You know, I have no idea. I have not ever had the presence of mind to even ask. All I know is that now some people would say the Nordics or the Palladians. I mean, who knows? These beings that I've been seeing for the last 2 years, are from the Pleiades. Some people would say these gray beings are from Zeta Reticuli. Again, there are different species of grays. Again, the brothers and sisters that I saw were chalk white. So I don't, the short answer is I don't know exactly where they're coming from.
Yeah. The subtitle of your book, A New World, if you can take it, is God, Extraterrestrials, and the Evolution of Human Consciousness. What is the evolution of human consciousness?
In my mind, the evolution of human consciousness is that humanity, obviously not all at one time, is that we will individually, if we want to evolve, if we want to be mature, it's like Arthur C. Clarke's book, Childhood Ends, A Childhood's End, where that we are learning that we are more powerful than we think we are, that we are not separated from creation or God or all that is, and that we are here to be stewards of this planet and in many ways of each other. And so the way we've been doing things now, this belief in scarcity, this killing each other over differences, has got to stop if we want to survive as a species. It's no different from whether you're talking about the teachings of Jesus or Buddha. It's about raising our own consciousness and evolving so that we can go on to the next step of evolution and to have a more authentic, a more a more love-filled life. Mm-hmm. For me, that is the message. But it's not a new message, and certainly not a sexy one, but it's very difficult to achieve.
Yeah. Now, why would aliens from another planet be traveling here? I assume millions of miles or a number of miles. Why would they care about us?
Well, I think they care about us because they're a little more evolved in that we're all one. Mm-hmm. And what we do to another person, we're doing to ourselves. I think that's number one. Number two is because there's no such thing as time and space, and these beings have the knowledge and the technology in order to bend time, if you will, to collapse time, if you will, in our linear way of looking at life. Yes, why would someone come billions of miles? But it may not be billions of miles. It could be another dimension right here parallel with us, as quantum physics is starting to tell us. But for probably a less, altruistic may be too strong a word, but for a more pragmatic reason, is that when we split the atom over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we also alerted other people in the universe that there's something going on in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. That these beings are very warlike. If that, after that time, it seems that sightings have increased. And so we have the technology, but we don't have the spirituality in order to deal with this. And so we're a danger to them as much as to ourselves.
Fascinating. Now, in your book, A New World, If You Can Take It, you ask the question, is God an E.T.? In your yes. opinion, is God an E.T.?
No, not at all. I think that, actually, and I got that title for that chapter, there was a book written back in the early 60s, 70s by R. L. Dion, called Does God Drive a Flying Saucer? And he comes down on the side of that, yes, that God is an extraterrestrial and that he, in fact, does drive a flying saucer. I feel, and I'm thinking that, no, we have mistaken the beings in our sacred text for being the creator itself, but there, in Gnosticism, there's a history of that there's an evil God and an altruistic God, but over top of those beings is something called creation. Palladian spirituality uses that word. A lot of Native American tribes use the word creator. And there is an intelligence. It's not anthropomorphic. It's an energy. Any words that I could use to describe it would not be adequate because the finite can never comprehend the infinite. But it is not this God that is Santa Claus, that if we're naughty, we're going to be barbecued in eternity, or if we're nice, we're going to go to heaven. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little more sophisticated, and I would say probably a little more complicated than that. So that's what I wanted to get people away from, that there's a God who's Santa Claus, and if you're naughty or nice, you get your rewards that way.
Do you believe that man is an eternal being, that we will be around forever after this life?
Yes, I believe in life after life, definitely.
Okay. And do you believe in angels and demons?
I believe that angels are messengers and that a lot of the beings we call angels are extraterrestrials. Now, I want to qualify that. I'm not saying there are no angels. Mm-hmm. I've never seen an angel. But I have seen off-world intelligences, and they didn't have wings. And so I posit that we mistook those beings, because angels just means messenger in Greek.
Right.
So from the word angelos. So, yes, I believe that the people have seen angels. I have not, but I have seen extraterrestrials.
You talked about how the word change and God are interchangeable. Can you explain that?
Yeah. I feel that I believe in, we can say God. I don't believe I'm separate from God. I do take the word Jesus is saying very seriously, that the kingdom of heaven is within you. Mm-hmm. But, and it should be and, but also I know that we've made God anthropomorphic. God gets angry. God gets sad. God cries for us. God has, well, and I don't believe that anymore.
Right.
I believe that God is many things, and one of the things could be change, because that is certain. God is nature. God can be nature. There's certain laws in the universe. You reap what you sow. What goes around comes around. That's part of God. I'm trying to get people away from this Santa Claus anthropomorphic God, who really is just a giant humanoid, the way we look at mm-hmm. this being. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we're going to evolve, we're going to have, like Paul says, when I was a child, I thought like a child.
Right.
But now we have to have a more adult view of how the universe works, instead of this polarity that it's either this or that. Life would be easier if things were that simple, but in my life, there's a lot of gray. And so I think that we have to be able to incorporate that as we mature as human beings and as a species.
Right. Who was Jesus?
For me, Jesus was a way shower, an avatar, if you will, a prophet, mm-hmm. One of many people who has tried to show humankind a better way, if you will, to live out our lives, to lead committed lives, to lead more fulfilled lives, to bring us around to the divinity that is within each and every one of us. That is who Jesus is to me. Is Jesus God? Yes, but no more than you and I are God. What dwells in Jesus dwells in us. It's just that somehow we've forgotten that. Mm-hmm. And so we choose fear over love. We choose separation over unity. Mm-hmm. That's who Jesus is for me.
Right.
He's a dear brother.
Now, Jesus did say in the Bible, right, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. Those seem like pretty hard words, don't they?
They do, if you believe Jesus said that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the Bible that Jesus didn't say. Mm-hmm. The Bible's very different if you read it in some of its languages. So I'm not quite sure that he said that. But that only works for me.
Yeah.
Again,
right.
I don't believe that, and I'm not alone, but, you know, if that's the way for other people, that's fine. But we can pick up a newspaper and look at ISIS and look at fundamentalist Christianity. We can look in history who people have taken that line.
Yes.
And have slaughtered.
Yes.
Because they're not doing it my way. So I'm not so sure that that's meant that way, or even if that was.
Yes. Yes, unfortunately,
he's also said, in my Father's house are many mansions.
Yes.
He's also said that if you're not for me, you're against. He's also said, I have sheep that are not of this fold. Why are we not focusing on that as opposed to the exclusivity and
right.
the separate?
In Roswell, in 1947, I've heard that an alien died, and I don't know if that's true or not. In your experience, do aliens die?
Yes. Yes, they die. Some of them, at least according to the literature and from other contactee information, some of them can live, you know, thousands of years. If we look at the kings, the Egyptian kings list, we have some of these gods living 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, or ruling 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 years. And so one has to ask, is this a god in quotes, or is this a human being, or is it a hybrid? So yes, aliens die, people crash. Our government is allegedly has a lot of more information on this, but sure, that's the cycle of life: birth, death, and rebirth.
Right. In the Bible, I read that death came through sin. By one man, sin entered the world, which is Romans 5:12, and the world there is cosmos. So that would explain, if there were aliens, why physical death would be happening. In other words, man originally was an eternal being physically, but sin entered the world and caused death.
So if I see, I was raised as a Baptist, okay?
Mm-hmm. And sure.
We were all sinners and we would get yelled at on Sundays but you know, sin means missing the mark.
Right. That's right.
And we all missed the mark. And so somehow that word got turned around into you're not worthy. If it wasn't for this one man dying for you, you wouldn't be. That just doesn't work for me anymore. And
right,
so,
right. No, you know, and I respect that.
But again, I'm always clear, just like you are, that works for Michael.
Right.
I'm not telling anybody to believe that. At 58 years old, I have come to the conclusion that it really doesn't matter what people say they believe.
Right.
What matters is how they treat you.
Yes.
And, you know, by their fruits you shall know them. I mean, I know people, man, who go to church every Sunday and they're in Bible study on Wednesday nights, or they're in the temple or the mosque on Fridays, and they can be sometimes the most myopic, bigoted people I've ever run across. So I've just narrowed it down to, I know what you believe by how you treat me.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes my life much more simpler.
Right.
And also how you treat the planet. But because your actions are always going to be more than, but I also know that love unites.
Yes.
And anything that doesn't come from love is going to create us and them. I'm saved, you're not. I'm Tea Party, you're not. Your hair is kinkier, mine is blonde. I mean, those types of things separate. And unfortunately, the way religion has been handed down to us, religion separates. So for me to get through all the BS, I just say, you know how I am by how I treat you.
If there's an alien world and they want me to give up what I believe, what would be the difference between the opposite?
Well, I haven't had anyone tell me to give up what I believe. I've had people say there's another way, mm-hmm. because this other way is not working. But no, none of them have said I've had to believe this. What they're saying is your way leading you, making you a happier person? Mm-hmm. Is your way making you, your relationships healthier, not only with yourself, but the planet? If that is working for you, then you stick with it.
Yeah.
But if it is not, then perhaps you want to look at a different way.
Sure.
Yeah.
What are Pleiadians?
From my research, the Pleiadians are from the star system, what we call the Seven Sisters, from the Pleiades. They're usually portrayed as humanoid types that you could get in an elevator on and probably not know you were standing next to them. Probably you could feel the different energy about them. They're usually portrayed as blonde, blue-eyed, although I have heard that they, you know, they're just as varied as we are, and that they are one of many races that have been visiting the Earth for thousands of years. Billy Meyer, who's the famous contactee around the Palladians, a Swiss farmer, a one-armed Swiss farmer, has kind of put them on the map as far as a race of beings that have been visiting this planet.
And you were also invited to the Edgar Cayce conference last October. Can you talk about that?
It was wonderful. Yes, it was a delight. That was the first conference that I had done since coming out, talking about my experiences as a contactee. 15, 20 years ago, I'd never even talked about this. I talked about my research about and where I've gone, the Bible as an ancient astronaut, that kind of thing. And it was wonderful. I was there. Eric Van Doniken, was one of the speakers, Egyptologist John Anthony West, Giorgio, one of the producers of Ancient Aliens, at Colin Andrews. It was a wonderful experience. And what was really wonderful for me, I only had a little bit over an hour time to speak, is that a lot of people were saying, you know what, Michael, I've had the same experiences. I've seen the same people you said you've seen, and this is what's happened to me. And so it was this cloud of witnesses, if you will. And listen, from the latest data, the Pew surveys, I mean, 48% of the American people believe that our government is lying about what it knows about extraterrestrial life. 50% of the American people believe that that life exists. We have Britain, we have France, we have Brazil, Mexico, Australia, China, Russia. Their governments are all releasing data on extraterrestrials. So the time is now. The United States just released something I just saw on public media. I don't know if it's true or not, about Project Blue Book back in the 50s when the government was saying that they weren't interested in the topic and were very interested in the topic. But I mean, it's a new day. Yeah. And so, it's we have to grow up.
And before we go, talk about your website. What can people find? Give us your website and tell us what people can find there.
Oh, my website. Oh, I wish it was better, but a friend of mine actually made it for me. It's MichaelJSCarter.com. They'll find my book, Alien Scriptures. They will find some articles on some, I had written about my experiences in extraterrestrial life. They'll find some newspaper articles that I had written when I was writing for Asheville Citizen Times for about 4 or 5 months. And they'll also be able to contact me and to tell me what they think. And I always get back to them. There's a blog there. So that's what they'll see. Or they can Google me at Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. They'll get some YouTube interviews and some things about me and radio interviews and that kind of thing.
Great. And again, we've been speaking with Reverend Michael Carter. He's the best-selling author of the book Alien Scriptures, and his new book is A New World, If You Can Take It, God, Extraterrestrials, and the Evolution of Human Consciousness. And again, you can Google Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. Reverend Carter, I hope this wasn't too painful. Thank you so much for joining me this week.
It was wonderful.
Excellent. The way I look at the UFO phenomenon is, let's say we're working at a company. Michael's working at a company that I'm working at. And there's a rumor that goes around, and the rumor is that someone is buying the company. Or let's say I start that rumor. I'm in the shipping department, and I say to Michael, hey, Michael, there's a company that's buying our company. And Michael says, oh, no, that's not good news. So he goes to Betty in finance, and Betty says, no, Bruce is all wrong. Knowing me, she'd probably say, who's Bruce, first of all? But then she'd say, Bruce is all wrong. Another company is not buying us. We're buying the other company. So Michael says, oh, good. So then Michael goes to another department. Let's say it's the alien department. The alien department says, there's no other company buying you, but we aliens here at the alien department are taking over. We're merging with this corporation. You know what I would do? I would go to the CEO. If I trust the CEO and I believe he started the company, if I think the CEO is honest, if I think the CEO is true, if I think the CEO cares about the employees, I would go first to the CEO. I wouldn't go to Betty in finance. I wouldn't go to Bruce in shipping. I wouldn't go to the aliens for advice. I would go to the CEO, in this case, God. I would go to his word. And I would try to gain an understanding from that perspective. And so I wasn't debating Reverend Michael Carter. I like him. He's a nice guy. But I do believe that if aliens are dying, that's because of sin, and that would make sense because Romans 5:12, the word sin entering the world, the word there, world, is cosmos, or the universe. And the Bible also says all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. So that would explain death for aliens. What it wouldn't explain is, why did Jesus die here on earth? Unless the earth is a very important part of all of creation. Or Jesus went to all these other planets and all the bad aliens killed Jesus and he died and rose again for the sins of those planets. But that doesn't make sense either. And why does it say in Matthew 25 verse 32 that all the nations will be gathered together before God? It doesn't say aliens from other planets will be gathered together before God. God exists. Jesus Christ exists, and we know that from history. We know that from the writings of historians outside of the scriptures that Jesus existed. And we know we can't find his body. I think we have to start at the top with the CEO. And joining us this week is Mr. Robert Vera. Robert Vera enjoyed a 20-year career in the banking industry. In 2006, he took a leap of faith to follow his dream to become an entrepreneur. Robert serves on a number of nonprofit boards and as a mentor to returning veterans. He earned a bachelor's degree in political science from Boston College, and he is the author of A Warrior's Faith, Navy SEAL Ryan Jobe, A Life-Changing Firefight, and the belief that transformed his life. And Ryan Jobe and Chris Kyle were overseas together. And, of course, we now have the very popular movie American Sniper, the Clint Eastwood movie. But, again, the book is A Warrior's Faith by Robert Vera. And you can pre-order this book on Amazon tonight. But the book becomes available on March 3rd. Robert Vera, welcome to the Bruce Collins Show.
Bruce, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on. Now, have you seen American Sniper, and what are your thoughts about it?
I have, and I thought the movie was excellent. And, you know, I'll just tell you personally, I appreciate your introduction. Thank you very much for that. It was very gracious. And I knew Ryan Jobe, and those of you in the audience who have seen the movie or read the book, you'll know the name Ryan Jobe because Chris Kyle dedicated his book, American Sniper, to Ryan Jobe. The character Ryan Jobe, his name in the movie is Biggles. If you've seen the movie, you know that Biggles or Ryan Jobe was shot in the face by a sniper. But to your point, what I thought about the movie, it really emphasized where the real war is. It's at home. And I'll tell you what was most profound for me, and I think most impactful for me was not really the images on the screen. You know, I knew Chris Kyle. Mm-hmm. I knew Ryan Jobe. And at the end of the movie, I looked around and everybody was crying around me. I mean, for the first time, I think Americans have felt the shock of loss, the pain, the pride, all of it that comes with losing a loved one in war and or to the effects of war as they come home.
Yeah. We really haven't done a good job in the way we've treated returning veterans, have we?
Well, the good news and the bad news is this. The VA is doing their best. I mean, I'm underwhelmed, right? I mean, in my hometown of Phoenix, Arizona, you know, the VA has been singled out there for up to a year in delays for treatment. You know, veterans end up dying, waiting to be seen, you know. So, look, the fact of the matter is that we owe, the fact that you and I are talking tonight is, that's because of a document called the First Amendment. It's a piece of paper with words on it. It has no currency whatsoever unless there's a rule of law that's upheld by service members, men like Ryan Jobe and Chris Kyle, who are willing to stand post with a rifle to enforce that rule of law. So when you ask, have we treated our veterans, our returning veterans, with dignity, with appreciation, with pride, you know, to my mind, no. I mean, right. There may be people that argue with me, but no, to my mind, no.
Right. Take me back, before we talk about Ryan Jobe, how did you become involved in working with military veterans?
Yeah, I mean, I started my career, I worked for a United States Senator, and I worked in an area of constituent services, which I dealt exclusively with military members of the service, military members, and veterans. You know, fast forward, I left government altogether. I spent 20 years in the financial service business, or 18 years in the financial service business. And then one day I had left. I just decided that I needed, you know, frankly, I just wanted to be more significant in the lives of others.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just felt that I needed to make a change. And, so long story short, I left. A friend of mine had been going, he was in the Navy. He had gone through BUDS with Ryan Jobe. He came to visit me in Arizona and that's how I met Ryan Jobe. I had not, in the 20 years, I had supported many veterans organizations, the Pat Tillman Foundation. But when I met Ryan Jobe, that's when I decided that I really need to, make a committed effort to ensuring that their stories are told, and that when they come home and they're fighting the real war here, that they have my support, my resources, my connections. That when they were over there spending a decade fighting a war, you know, frankly, I was here building a network of relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about your network, it's directly related to your net worth in life. Let me repeat that. Your net worth is directly related to your network. So these guys left their network over there, right? Their command. Mm-hmm. You know, they went in the military. They're estranged from any of the family and friends they had here. So when they come back, I mean, the greatest resource that you could be to them is to have a relationship with them and introduce them to the opportunities that you've been introduced to. So that's how I got involved with it. It was through, you know, a personal relationship, a friendship with Navy SEAL Ryan Jobe. I mean, I'll tell you a quick story. The first time I met Ryan Jobe, I had transitioned out of government. I had started doing Ironman triathlons and decided that I really liked the training for Ironman triathlons more than I liked my real job. So I decided I was going to distill the tenets of that training into a program and use it in a workplace wellness. Nonetheless, I developed an endurance program. And so me and Ryan Jobe were having coffee one day. He's telling us what happened to him on the roof. He shows us his prosthetic eye with a pupil that's fashioned into the SEAL trident. And then he says to me, you know, hey, I've heard you've done Ironman triathlons. I'd really love to do one of those. And by the way, I have an opportunity to climb Mount Rainier. Do you want to train with me? So this is a guy who's completely blind. And he wants to do an Ironman triathlon. And he's climbing Mount Rainier. Of course I want to train with this guy, right? I mean,
right.
It's just what an opportunity to see, how motivated he is. Navy SEAL. So I said, yeah, I mean, that's how our relationship began. And it lasted until the day he died. The last time I talked to Ryan Jobe was 5 hours before he died. I mean, I gave the eulogy at his funeral.
Yeah. For those maybe who have not seen the movie, can you describe some of the events Ryan faced in the military?
Yeah, let me just, Hollywood did a great job, by the way, of putting 4 years of war into a 2.5-hour movie. But of course, it was truncated to fit, the experience was truncated, Ryan's experiences was shortened to fit into that format. But Ryan was shot on a rooftop on August 2nd, 2006 in Ramadi, Iraq. He was adjacent to Chris Kyle on that roof. They were covering their SEAL team below. Ryan was shot in the face by a sniper. His eye was gone, gravely wounded. No one believed that he would live. Ryan didn't, his whole team came up to it's a rescue mission, not a, capture or kill. It's rescue one of your own. His whole team started to work to maneuver to get Ryan off that roof. Chris Kyle was the first person there, and I asked Chris, with the sniper still out there who, made a headshot of Ryan Jobe, perhaps, 1,000 yards out, kind of asked him, hey, Chris, the sniper was still out there. Were you afraid? And Chris Kyle said to me, I was terrified. I knew that I was going to get shot on that roof, but I'd be useless to everybody if I got myself shot over on the other side of the roof. So if I was going to die, I'm going to help Brian doing it. So Brian gets shot. They go to up to the top of the roof. They start working on him, his team. They evacuate him off the roof. Ryan actually evacuated himself. He came to, told Chris that, you know, put me down, I'm okay, and he walked off the roof while his SEAL team covered for him, shot for him, so he could get to an awaiting Bradley. The movie, you know, shortens that experience. Then Ryan comes home. He was shot on August 2nd, 2006. He actually passed from this world on September 24th, 2009, so 3 years. In the movie, they have Ryan dying shortly after he is wounded. So that's really the difference in the movie. I mean, there was some other things that were just, you know, sort of contrived for movie purposes. But, you know, Ryan lived for 3 years after he was wounded. He came back. He lived in Scottsdale, Arizona, and, you know, 15 minutes from my house. You know, he's married. Mm-hmm. He was in school full-time when I met him. He graduated with honors with a 4.0 perfect grade point average. He was working for General Dynamics. He was enrolled in his MBA program. As I mentioned, he climbed Mount Rainier. I mean, he's an amazing guy. I mean, some of the other things that I'll just mention to you. You know, one day Ryan calls me up and said, hey, can you give me a ride to the airport? And I said, sure, yeah, no problem. So gets in the car, and I said, hey, where are you headed? Idaho. Oh, great. You know, what's going on there? I'm going hunting. Really? Yeah. Elk hunting. Okay. Well, you know, Ryan, you have to actually see them to hunt them, right? Yeah, don't worry about that. I got that all sorted out. And so, and you know, you may not want to mention to the other hunters that you're blind, right? Because they may be a little, you know, touchy about the idea that you're pointing a loaded gun at things you can't see. Yeah. Well, how do you like your elk? Burgers or chops? And I said, you surprised me. So a couple of days later, Ryan calls me and then texts me a photo of a 980-pound elk. He melted it with one shot.
Wow.
So, I mean, this guy was absolutely amazing. The story that I write is about our relationship and our friendship and what he meant to me and what he accomplished and really how he influenced me. And, you know, he was a really great guy. I mean, just we need more people like Ryan Jope out there. I submitted my manuscript, and I'll tell you why we need more people like him. Ryan Jope refused to be a victim. And I submitted my manuscript to my editor, and she called me and said, hey, you know, it seems like Ryan, you know, really didn't have a bad day. I mean, you know, did he ever bemoan the fact that he was blind? And prior to answering that, I said, you know, let me just think through that. I just want to make sure that I don't miss anything. I just want to sort of think through it. So I did. Called her back and said, look, I have to tell you something. Ryan Jope never complained about being blind to me. Never bemoaned the fact, never wished. In fact, quite the contrary. Ryan Jope said to me he was grateful for being the one who was shot on that roof because he could take it. Grateful for the opportunities that came to him, even though he was blind.
Wow. Can you tell us, the title of your book is A Warrior's Faith, and again, it's by Robert Vera. Can you talk about Ryan's faith?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really till later that I discerned this, because Ryan wasn't a Bible thumper.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he wasn't somebody that quoted scripture and, you know, he just wasn't that person. He, you know, there was no fish emblems or crosses or, you know, Ryan just lived the gospel. I mean, he was refused to be a victim. I don't think I ever heard Ryan curse. I'm sure, you know, Navy SEALs, you know, I'm sure the, you know, the vernacular and the vocabulary they use is perhaps, you know, not one that's for radio, but I never heard Ryan, you know, curse. All I heard Ryan do and be was grateful. He was full of forgiveness. He worked really hard. Ryan, all he had was his faith and hard work. You know, later after Ryan passed, one of my favorite, you know, quotes in the Bible, scripture quotes from the Old Testament, and it's Hebrews. Faith is being sure of what you hope for and certain of what you cannot see. Ryan Jope embodied that. He was all in. I mean, Ryan Jope, he had faith like nobody else. In fact, it's curious that Ryan and I used to joke about it, that his namesake, Job, is, you know, the only other Job I knew is the Job in the Bible,
right,
whose faith, I mean, you know, if you know the story of Job, God allows everything to be taken from Job, and, you know, Ryan and I used to laugh about that, everything, and Ryan said, but yeah, but his nagging wife, you know, he just left the one thing that Job, you know, didn't want, and God leaves it. Ryan and I thought that was hilarious, but, you know, Job, you know, he goes through these tests, and he never, ever forsakes his Redeemer. He never says, you know, never bemoans the fact that these things happen to him. In fact, one time, Job thanks God for the crisis that he's going through in his life. And I thought that was so profound because Ryan, Job, you know, was nearly the same. It was an uncanny resemblance. But I think that brings up, you know, a really important point is that, you know, Ryan became, I think, extraordinary, led an extraordinary life because he reacted to his condition differently. Ryan used his blindness, the fact that all these things happened to him, to elevate himself to something extraordinary. And I finally came to learn that that's what the crises in our life are. We all have a crisis in our life at some time. Mm-hmm. And it's how we react to those crises that defines who we are. In fact, that's what we love about our heroes. And I know that word is thrown around a lot, but I now know what a hero is. A hero is somebody who acts different, greater, I think, than their past. They're not a victim of it. A hero is somebody who acts greater than their environment or their condition, like Chris Kyle did on that roof. He knew he was going to get shot, but he went anyway. And greater than the way that they feel. Ryan, I'm sure, was terrified, and I'm sure Chris Kyle was, but they still went forward. And that's what I think is heroic about those guys. And that, I think they did that because, you know, not because they were fearless, because they were fearful, but they did it anyway. So these, you know, I think Ryan just embodied so many of those things, and I think it was his faith that is that he saw that these things happened to him for a reason. It was all part of a greater plan. That he had to do it, and he refused to be a victim.
Yeah. You know, you do a lot, you do a lot for veterans, but I'm getting the feeling that you get a lot back, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I get more out of it than I give.
Yeah.
And, I'll tell you what, the most selfless group of people I've ever met.
Again, we've been speaking with Robert Vera. He's the author of A Warrior's Faith, Navy SEAL Ryan Job, A Life-Changing Firefight, and The Belief That Transformed His Life. Robert, thank you so much for joining us this week. Thank you so much for joining us here at the Bruce Collins Show, where you can find us every Friday night at midnight here at WWPR, 1490 AM. Remember, God loves you. We do too. Don't give up.